There is a lot of talk about Bitcoin ETFs, ETFs, you name it at the moment. A lot of people don't know what all of this means. Like, even I'm struggling with some of it. So I pinged James, who is a financial advisor and he owns an investment firm. He was one of the sponsors at our last conference and also one of the speakers. And I just wanted to dive into it. So I messaged him to come on and he was like, yeah, let's do it. But before we get into it, I just want to make it clear that nothing in this podcast is financial advice. Okay, let's jump into it. Welcome back, James. It's good to have you on the podcast.
It's good to be back.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I was looking back earlier today. Can you guess the last time that you were on the podcast, when that was?
Must be 18 months ago, middle of 2022.
Yeah, so September 22.
September 22. Okay, not too
Yeah,
bad. Pretty
pretty
accurate.
close, pretty close. And then, well, a lot's happened since then. Your company obviously sponsored our conference. You spoke at our conference, alongside Fidelity and Coutts Bank on the panel that was called Institutional Wall of Money. And we might have, this was kind of what we were talking about was the ETF and when that would happen, what that would happen. So I just wanted to get you on and just break it down a little bit into the basics of what's happened and is this significant or not.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Right. So can you, since it's been a long time, can you just do a little intro to who you are and what is you do?
Absolutely, yeah. So I run two different companies, really. I run a financial advisory company and I run an investment management company. The investment management company also has an investment platform. So everything's about investment, really. Really to the end retail client. So really the average person that's got a bit of money that they want to invest, either advising them or managing that money or giving them the ability to transact in investments or open things like pensions or ISAs. So really all of that stuff right at the front end for an end client.
It's well, let's just dive into what we're talking about. So I've been bombarded with stuff and I've been bombarded with questions from my WhatsApp, from email, you name it. Even my mom messaged me saying, is this significant? This spot Bitcoin ETF getting approved in the US. But a lot of people don't, outside of Bitcoin and outside of the financial services world, have no clue what an ETF means. Like, is this significant? I don't know. So are you able to explain like what exactly an ETF is in like just basic terms for people?
I mean, the easiest way to think about an ETF, so it stands for exchange traded funds. So it's something you can buy through a stock exchange. So just like you'd buy shares in a listed company, in the UK, BT, whatever you would want to buy through a standard exchange, say the London Stock Exchange. So, but an ETF, what it is, it's like buying a company that all they do is buy, say, a certain asset class or a group of assets. So, for example, say there's a company that's called, a Bitcoin company. All it does is buy Bitcoin. And then you buy a share in that Bitcoin company that all it does is buy Bitcoin. So it's giving you this, it's an indirect, direct exposure to the actual holding of Bitcoin for example, a spot Bitcoin ETF.
It's this, I don't know if this was a good analogy that I said one day. So please tell me if this is just awful or not. But I kind of used it as Spotify, using an analogy of Spotify of have you pay this one subscription to this company, but you can get a lot of different songs, albums inside, instead of actually buying the underlying. In the old days, it would be a CD. So you're getting the music, but you don't actually own the music. Am I way off the beat here, or is that like, is
No,
it?
I think from one angle that is a good analogy. You know, you're not actually buying the music, you've just got access to it and exposed to, you know, this whole universe of music. To be honest, I would probably link that analogy probably more to what, for example, like an investment platform or a broker account is, where, you know, you can open one account and you can buy all of these different investments, etc. I suppose I'm thinking off the top of my head here for an analogy. So the difference would be, say you've got a bag of M&Ms, you can buy an M&M. So you have to go and you have to buy and you have to hold this M&M. You have to make sure it doesn't melt in your hand. You have to put it somewhere safe so you can eat it later. Or you can buy a pre-packaged bag of M&Ms in a bag that you brought from a shop. It's already there. It's already nice and safe. So in the future, you can either maybe sell that bag to somebody else or use that bag of M&Ms yourself or eat it yourself. If you have it yourself, there's obviously a risk you could lose it or it melts in your hand or it gets damaged in some way. So I suppose in terms of it's packaging up something by somebody else and making it easy to buy and hold on to. So probably not the best analogy I've just given, but hopefully people sort of understand what I'm getting at. It's a packaged product of something that makes easy to buy, hold on to, and consume or get rid of at some point in the future.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we've got two very different analogies there, and hopefully they help a little bit for different people. Right. Well, let's look at, so why is this US ETF so significant compared to ETFs in a different country? So Canada have had a spot Bitcoin ETF for a long time. Why is the US so significant to this?
Well, I think it's significant for a number of different reasons. I mean, to be honest, nobody can get away from it. The world looks at the US. You know, the US leads the way on a whole number of different things, and particularly now on financial regulation and how they're treating things. Generally, you've got the biggest financial institutions in the world that derive from the US, and then they've then got the ability to influence and access other markets, for example, the UK. So the US regulator approving a spot Bitcoin ETF effectively opens up those large global financial institutions to then going to regulators in other countries to say, look, we've already got this here. It's working. You know, the SEC has approved it. We've done all the background work to make sure it's safe. Now, we want to launch it in your jurisdiction. So it's just the fact it's the US and it has such a weight around the world globally. And it's mainly the scale. It's the scale of those financial institutions. BlackRock with their 17 trillion or whatever the number is, I think it varies quite a lot and people have different views on how they look at how much assets BlackRock's got. But that scale, BlackRock in and of itself is bigger than a lot of countries. Therefore, if it wants to go and launch something in a country, it's got a massive ability to affect the regulation and the interpretation by regulators of different products being launched. I think the other thing is there's a big difference between what's happened in the US compared to other countries. There's two, I believe it's two, there may be more. There's already spot Bitcoin ETFs available in Europe at the moment, which some people know, some people don't know. The problem with those is that they're only available to professional investors or institutional investors. So even though they're launched, so you can buy a product similar to that that's just been approved in the US, they're not actually available to the average person on the street to open an investment account, some sort of brokerage account, and buy, because it's not approved for a retail investment audience. So for me, the biggest thing that's happened in the US in particular is that they've now approved these large institutions on US soil to make available spot Bitcoin ETFs that the average person on the street can go and buy. They can go, well, in the US, there's Charles Schwab brokerage accounts. They can open that and they can buy a spot Bitcoin ETF. That's a massive deal. That's one of the things that I think is being missed in the media at the moment. It's not the fact it's a spot Bitcoin ETF. It's something that's available and can be marketed to the average person on the street.
Well, for anyone that's watching this, I've got a new setup with my camera. It looked like my eyes were closed. So now I'm like looking up at the camera, which is why I'm now directly looking at the lens. But we are seeing so much of that marketing already. Like, we've seen, like, all of the companies with ETFs, they came out with marketing material and, like, quite powerful messages. Like, they're all 30 seconds long. But now the retail investors are seeing this. Is that from companies that they know, they trust, they've used for years? Do you think that's now helping Bitcoin's credibility, tapping into the mainstream?
Massively. I mean, I think with both retail investors and both professional investors, you know, I think people take, I suppose, confidence in the fact that these large, well-known institutions are now launching things, which massively legitimizes the asset class itself, Bitcoin in this case. And the fact they've had to go through, and to be honest, it's sort of a good thing they've had to battle with the SEC to get these things approved, because actually it shows that this isn't something they've just tried to launch and they've gone away. What they've done is they've tried to launch over a long period of time. And that shows this inertia at these large companies to get these things approved. And it also means they've actually refined how they're actually going to offer them and manage them going forward. So I think all of that just gives so much confidence. Like I said, even to professional investors. A professional investor, so I've got an investment company. If I launched a spot Bitcoin ETF, P1, my business, you know, there's not a huge amount of people that are going to know it. And people aren't going to take a huge amount of confidence globally, let alone nationally, in the fact that we have launched something that's been approved by a regulator. The weight of brand of the guys that have just launched is just massive. And it changes the game, I think, in terms of both people's interest, their belief in it is a viable asset that they should hold potentially over the long term. It's the narrative has changed around Bitcoin, I think.
Yeah, I would second that. The now people that were calling me crazy for starting a Bitcoin company and hosting these events, like, and now seeing them both on social media interact with my stuff, but also I've had a few people message me, and it's quite nice to have that. And like, oh, I'm not crazy is what I was referring to.
Well, you're talking about you being crazy. Back in 2016-17, I was trying to get our investment team to take Bitcoin seriously, and they just thought I was absolutely mental. So yeah, I've been through that whole thing, people thinking I'm crazy, which it is nice suddenly that it's suddenly sort of coming to fruition, and, you know, suddenly we're not so crazy anymore.
Yeah, it's I actually wrote an article about that, that crazy is a numbers game. Yep. And it's like, you're only deemed crazy if you don't have the group behind you, the numbers behind you.
Yep.
Are
it's
you
always the crazy ones that have got to think differently though first.
Exactly. Is it back to that, was it the Apple advert that done that?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, that was, yeah, such a good advert. Yeah. So are you seeing people, so, I mean, it's very soon, like, it only got approved a couple of days ago. Are you starting to see anything different? Are you starting to see more people talk about it, or is it still too early days to tell?
Well, I think in my world, obviously, I have had conversations with people quite quickly after the Bitcoin approval, particularly because I'd spoken to people about Bitcoin in the past, and suddenly people have, you know, sort of suddenly seen it's legitimate things. So they've reached out wanting to chat about it. My LinkedIn, obviously, is got a load of investment professionals. Suddenly, you know, there's a lot of commentary around it. So clearly it's suddenly come to the fore in a lot of investment professionals and financial advisory firms' minds. I think that will probably drop off a little bit after the initial news. But for me, I think it's the longer term narrative now that will start to come into play. And I think it's just been validated to a lot of people who are now going to start researching it properly. And they're going to take their time to research it properly and to get comfortable with it. But now they're starting to have vehicles that they can actually use and implement strategies with, which I think is the game changer.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree that I think a lot of people saw this as like a moment of it's going to pump the price is going to rocket up. But it is just about giving it the credibility, and now it's up to people to learn about it. Because
absolutely,
I mean, it's taken us, I'll speak for myself, but it's taken me years to learn this to where I am on Bitcoin. And you can't expect other people to learn about it overnight.
No, so I mean, it takes long. And I think this is another point that will start a load of other people researching it properly and looking to understand it. So I think it is, it's suddenly hit another point where there's a much wider group of people now looking into it seriously. They aren't just looking at headline media stuff. They're now looking at it and researching it. Particularly investment professionals will be looking at it and doing their normal analysis like they would do another asset class and seeing it, how it potentially does fit into portfolios.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to what happened yesterday then. So we saw over $4.6 billion on opening day, which is a record, I believe, for any debut ETF. What's your take on that? Did you expect that sort of volume on the first day?
It was higher than I was expecting. I mean, I don't know if there was some research. I think it was Standard Chartered, and there's a couple of others that had estimated that potentially maximum 100 billion of assets would flow into these products in the first 12 months. I think the average estimate from different analysts was 50 billion. So to have on day one, nearly a tenth of that low estimate and, you know, a 20th of that high estimate shows that actually if inertia builds from here, those estimates could be completely sort of blown out the water within 12 months. I think the only caveat to that is I do wonder, and I haven't had the chance to look into it, there was quite a lot of money that was already in futures. I know we didn't want to get into the complexities of the difference between a futures ETF and a spot ETF, but there was already a lot of assets in futures Bitcoin ETFs. So again, I haven't looked into it, but I wonder how much has just unwound out of futures Bitcoin ETFs and into the spot Bitcoin ETFs. So in terms of net flows going into either derivatives of the Bitcoin price or Bitcoin itself, I haven't quite looked at, but that could be the reason why the price didn't get affected that much, because actually there was just a flow from one place to another place.
Talking of flows from one place to another, I was just thinking this the other day, and I don't know the answer, and because I'm not really, I wasn't really sure what would happen, and it was all about MicroStrategy. So people have been using MicroStrategy as like a way to get exposure to Bitcoin because they hold, what was it, 100, off the top of my head, I think I know this number, 189,150 Bitcoin.
I think you could be right. I can't remember the exact number, but I think you're somewhere pretty close.
But people have been using that, and I know a lot of people that have been using that as getting exposure to Bitcoin. Do you think now, what do you think is going to happen there? Because now people don't have to do that. Are we is MicroStrategy now seen as a riskier option, would you say? Or where do you think that sits?
So I understand why people have done it, because actually we operate a portfolio in my investment company, which does contain MicroStrategy, and we hold it for exactly that reason, because effectively it was a proxy for Bitcoin to a great extent. Whether it's more risky or not, I suppose, is the question. MicroStrategy does have debt in the company. So debt in any investment vehicle or any company does add some risks. Obviously, if you can't meet the obligations of that debt, being interest payments or the point at which you've got to repay the capital, there's risk there. And there's a timescale risk in terms of actually when that money is due back, when you've got to make interest payments. So that does add some risk. The only thing that I would say counter to that is MicroStrategy also has an operating business, so it is also generating revenue from its more traditional business. So I think that there's definitely some risk around the debt. Obviously, you've got a management team there that are making decisions. They could make bad decisions. But I also think the fact that you've got an operating business that's generating revenue, and I believe that a big part of their long-term strategy is actually to use things like the Lightning Network and embed that into companies that it's working with. there's a slightly different story. I think I still, and again, none of this, and I'm sure you'll put this at the start of the podcast, none of what we're talking about is investment advice and all of the usual stuff there. I still think there's a reason why MicroStrategy could be something that may be interesting to hold, just because there is a slightly different story there to just buying a spot Bitcoin ETF.
Yeah, that's answered my question anyway, and given me another perspective on it. Let's go down. So I'm getting a lot of people. So I put on Twitter. I put on Twitter earlier today.
But it's X, isn't it?
But, it's X. Yeah, I even got that wrong. I always put in my in our emails. I'll put like X brackets, formerly Twitter. It just sounds weird, X in a sentence. But I'd put, like, I'm going to have you on the podcast later today. And does anyone have any questions? And a lot of people were asking around the financial advisor part of things. So, like, how big a deal is this? And I know you talked about this on stage at our conference as well. So I'd be interested. This is almost us looping back on it. Yep. How much of a deal is this for financial advisors in the US being able to offer Bitcoin to their clients?
Well, it is massive. And I think there's a number of things you've got to think about if you're a financial advisor. One of the things is you want to advise your client on, you know, the best portfolio or the most appropriate portfolio for the client that you're dealing with. So you've got to think, there's a whole range of things you're thinking about in terms of their investment time horizon, their financial objectives, their personal situation. There's a whole range of things. But one of the main things operationally, if you're an advisor, is you really are only advising on regulated investment products for the most part. So as an example, if you were to come to me, and I'm really talking with my understanding of UK regulation as opposed to US regulations, but talking about advisors generally, if I think you as a client, say Jordan, you should hold a bit of gold, for example, as an advisor, I'm not going to advise you to go out and buy some gold jewelry or go and buy a gold bar and put it under your bed or put it in your safe or whatever. Just like an advisor is not going to go and go, you should buy Bitcoin, go and buy yourself a, you know, non-custodial wallet and go and, you know, buy it wherever and put it on there and then store that, make sure you keep your seed word safe. All of that stuff is something that an advisor is never going to do. They can't, regulation stops them from doing, and it's not something a financial advisor is ever going to be comfortable doing with a client. So having a regulated product like a spot Bitcoin ETF means that an advisor can way more comfortably speak to their clients legitimately about, as part of their overall investment holdings, holding potentially a small part of their portfolio in Bitcoin. Because not only is it regulated, but the advisor can actually do that transaction for the client through the normal trading accounts that advisor will use. So just like all of the other funds and investments the client may already have, they can go and they can buy that investment fund, a spot Bitcoin ETF, alongside the other assets. So they're buying it through the same medium that they buy all of the other investments that they buy for their clients, and they can report on it to their clients alongside all their other investments. So there's these regulatory reasons why it's big for a financial advisor in the US. There's operational reasons, including both reporting to the client and ease of buying through the investment trading platforms that they're used to using. And it's something that allows them to actually form as part of a wider investment strategy for their clients. So there's a huge amount of reasons why it suddenly makes things a lot easier for an advisor to have a discussion with their clients about digital assets generally and Bitcoin specifically.
Do you think that there will... Do you think some financial advisors will be very much down the Bitcoin rabbit hole and very much learning about it? They've got their Bitcoin in self-custody. Do you think we will see any like halfway house of that, of financial advisors? Because I totally get that they can, like, they want to advise something that's regulated and like through a platform that they deal with, and through self-custody, they wouldn't they wouldn't be really, they wouldn't be doing much. Do you think we'll see something like a halfway house between that, where they advise holding a little bit in self-storage, or how do you think that'll play out? I'm just thinking off the top of my head.
Based on current regulations, this is, again, I'm talking about sort of regulations in the UK, but I know we're talking about US advisors, but the regulations are quite similar in terms of how advisors have to approach things. I just can't see that there will ever be an advisor to an average retail client that they're dealing with advising. They aren't going to actually recommend that the client goes and buys something and custodies it themselves. It's just, although I completely understand the underlying basis of, you know, Bitcoin, you know, self-custody, you know, you don't need a financial intermediary in the middle. I completely understand that. But a regulator or advisor, whether you like it or not, they are regulated by a central body of a government, and they've got to follow the rules that apply in the country that they're operating. So I probably don't think there'll be a halfway house. And the reason I think I can say that with quite a lot of confidence is going back to my example of gold. Mm-hmm. You will never, or maybe incredibly rarely, have a client that will say, go and buy some gold coins or buy a gold bar and buy a safe and keep it at your house, because that's something you should do and that's part of the investment strategy I'm recommending. They just won't do that. Whether there's off the record conversations that happen around that, I don't know. But I think in terms of from a professional capacity, I just don't think that's ever going to happen. At least not in the UK, maybe in the US, but I doubt it. The regulations apply in a pretty similar way.
Yeah. Yeah. When you put it like that, it makes sense, because they are working within a framework.
And the risk an advisor exposes themselves to is they say, oh yeah, go and buy a non-custody wallet. The client suddenly loses their seed words, or they lose access to it. They then go back to their advisor and say, well, you told me to do this. I've now lost this. And it exposes the advisor to potentially, you know, having problems with their clients, or even, you know, being sued by their clients. So it's just something that's very unlikely that they'll ever do. I think it's slightly different in the ultra high net worth sort of family office space, where you've got these very wealthy people with a group of advisors that they may advise them in that way. But mm-hmm. that's people that've got tens of millions or hundreds of millions, where they've got people that they've got so many assets that actually it really may be something that they've got the money and the wherewithal to have a massive safe to store various things. So, but that's not really what we're talking about here in terms of retail financial advice.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. Let's move the conversation on to the UK then. Yeah. Let's, because obviously when I said that I put that tweet out, I put that post out, sorry, not a tweet.
Yep.
A lot of the people were from the UK, and just because of everything that's been happening here around regulation and wanting to be a crypto hub, but maybe the regulations are saying a little bit different. Why are you seeing that? Actually, that's my first question to you. Are you seeing the regulations that we're lagging behind the UK? Well, we're lagging behind the US.
Well, I think one thing, and I don't know if we're coming back to it, but just for absolute clarity, if I made it clear, the spot Bitcoin ETFs that have been launched in the US, just for clarity, retail investors in the UK can't buy those US spot Bitcoin ETFs, just for absolute clarity.
I'm glad you covered that.
just in case people think there's now these spot Bitcoin ETFs that are in the US. Unfortunately, through broking accounts in the UK or the investment platforms that people may be using in the UK, you can't access those. They haven't been approved for marketing and promotion and access and to be made accessible to UK retail investors by the UK regulator. So that sort of leads into them what we're talking about now. The UK did start moving forward in quite a good manner. It did set up a regime for crypto asset firms. So you can, if you're going to do something in the crypto asset space, quite early on, you could join a sandbox environment with the Financial Conduct Authority, and you could register yourself as a crypto asset firm. And as long as you are matching AML, sort of anti-money laundering regulations, and know your client requirements, you could actually start working with the FCA on your own crypto asset business. And I know a lot of your listeners won't like crypto being used in the sense of Bitcoin, but I'm just using it generally, and that's what the FCA use. From a approving products for mass market resale distribution, something like a spot Bitcoin ETF, that's a much different thing. And the SEC in the US they've suddenly leaped forward where Europe was, where the UK was in terms of its regulation. As we all know, Gary Gensler running the SEC very much did not like the idea of a spot Bitcoin ETF. They've sort of been forced into that position by, I think, courts in the US and pressure from large US institutions. But if they didn't have that pressure, there wouldn't be spot Bitcoin ETFs in the US. The FCA hasn't ever had that pressure from large institutions in the UK. So that's why I think we've probably fallen a bit behind and why suddenly the SEC has leapfrogged in terms of its approval of a mass market retail instrument like a spot Bitcoin ETF. Inevitably, I believe the FCA will end up approving spot Bitcoin ETFs for UK retail investors. Once the US has done something, the biggest players in the UK market are the likes of Invesco, Fidelity, BlackRock. These are guys that have just got their spot Bitcoin ETFs approved in the US. They are going to be looking at the UK. The UK is still a significant market for them to operate within. So I think now they've got their approval there, there's going to be discussions happening with the regulator over here pretty quickly to launch similar products that are approved by the FCA for use by retail investors. How long that's going to take is questionable. I don't know, but it will happen. I'm relatively certain on that.
Okay, that's interesting. It feels like now they've ticked off the US and they've got what they wanted, like the likes of BlackRock, Fidelity, all of these investment firms, that now they can just turn their attention to the UK and...
Well, they've got a model and a framework for how things are being governed, how they're being managed, how they're reporting to a regulator like the SEC. They've done all of that groundwork now through their application process to launch in the US. So a lot of what they've done there and a lot of the governance structure that they put around it can be applied in the UK. So they've now got, you know, they've probably now got 90% of what they need to do, you know, in terms of the governance mechanisms all in place now that they can come to the UK. They can adjust it for the UK market and UK regulations, but it's an adjustment. It's not, you know, it's not writing a new book. It's making a few tweaks to the end of the book to then go to the regulator with.
So will that get, will we build, or I'm just thinking outside of the UK now, because I know 20% of our listeners are actually in Europe. Will that be the same within Europe? Or is the next like domino just the UK, or where, how does it stand? Like, cause obviously we've got US at the top, like they're the top dogs, but then is there the way I'm envisioning it is there's an order of like where they will go next and like tick off each one.
Well, UK regulation is quite similar to European regulation because obviously while we were still part of the EU, the regulation was very much driven centrally from Europe. So the UK regulation is quite similar to European regulation still, even after a number of years have passed. So I think they'd probably approach it to both Europe and the UK separately, I would think probably at the same time. Obviously, I don't know that, but it's just because the regulation is quite similar. Europe's surprised with a few things in the crypto space, because a lot of the time there's a lot of narrative that they're very much against it, particularly Bitcoin mining. They try to put loads of regulation around that and stop it happening in Europe. But then suddenly they're approving things far in advance of the UK and the US in terms of the launch of funds. For example, there's probably more now. There are spot Bitcoin ETFs available in Europe already. So they'll probably, going back to the actual question, I think they'll approach the UK and the Europe at the same time. However, you know, Europe's obviously a bigger market, so that may sway them to focus on that first, and then it will be the UK. Obviously, I don't know, but they'll happen at similar times, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's what I had in my head anyway. Right, well, that's everything that I wanted to cover, and like, it's just good to ask. Because people have been coming to me and I've been like, this is what I know. I don't know a lot about the whole ETF space. So yeah, it's been great to have you on. Is there anything that I've missed that you think, like, even questions that you're getting asked?
Well, I think one of the things that we discussed beforehand, which is probably, I think you asked about whether we could, as in, I think me, my companies could access those spot Bitcoin ETFs, if that was actually something. So no, for we can't have a portfolio for a client and buy the spot Bitcoin ETF, because in that scenario, the client is the owner of that ETF and it's not approved for a retail investor. What investment funds that operate in the UK can do is they could buy the US spot Bitcoin ETFs within a fund, within a retail fund in the UK. So that may mean that some UK approved retail funds may buy a small proportion of the US spot Bitcoin ETFs. So you could see some asset flows from the UK into those US spot Bitcoin ETFs via UK regulated funds, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So there are options for that at the moment. You mentioned Canada, but I mentioned the couple of spot Bitcoin ETFs in Europe. The reason that there hasn't been a big uptake of those is particularly the European ones, they've got quite a high cost to them. So I think 1-2% per annum in costs. So that's quite a high management cost these days. 1.5%, I think, is the other one. The US spot Bitcoin ETFs, they're at 0.2%, 0.3%. So they're at a much more reasonable cost level. That I think there could be fund managers in the UK that are looking at their well-diversified funds and say, you know what, actually, part of my retail fund, maybe I will buy 1% of a US spot Bitcoin ETF within my UK regulated fund, which can be purchased by a retail investor in the UK.
Okay.
So there's an indirect ability to be exposed to Bitcoin via US Bitcoin spot Bitcoin ETFs by a UK investor. I don't know if I've explained that well,
but it
does open up some asset flows from the UK from institutional investors here.
Yeah, at a low fee as well, because surely we will see the fees in Europe come down when the big boys come in, let's just say.
They'll have to, just because as an investment professional, my team, what they'll do is, if you're getting a spot Bitcoin ETF, what you're doing is you're pretty much get, as long as the custody, it's all safe custody and you trust the institution, really you're getting the same thing. You're getting something that's tracking the price of Bitcoin. So if something's 1% and something's 0.1%, you would go to the equivalent thing at 0.1%, because you want to save that erosion of investment performance due to fees. So you would go for the lowest cost option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just from what I saw, going back to when the likes of BlackRock, Fidelity, whatever, come in, we saw the price or the fees plummet. It was almost like they were fighting, and yeah. I guess that's normal. I think it started off at like 1.52%, and it was like someone put in a lower fee, and then the other would go much lower and lower.
That's the beauty of competition, right? Yeah. So you've suddenly got, 'cause if you just had BlackRock launching on its own, and I think this was the SEC was really, hounded to make sure they approve all of them at the same time, which obviously now they have done the whole 11, and that's so that there was fair competition in the market. Because if you've got one spot Bitcoin ETF provider, they're going to go at a high cost, because if there's no other options available, you're the one choice, therefore you have a higher value. If there's 11 out there, that's great for the end consumer, because there's suddenly competition, and in this case price competition, so actually you're getting the product at a much cheaper cost.
Well, that's it's cleared up a lot for me, and hopefully for people listening as well. So if people want to get in contact with you or find out more about P1, where can they go?
I'm not actually on Twitter or X, or I do dip my toes in every now and again, but I've never quite got my head around it or been committed enough to it. But LinkedIn is where I do a lot of stuff. So, you can find me on LinkedIn. I mean, if you search P1 Investment Services, you'll be able to find out about P1 and see a little bit about what we're doing there in the digital asset space in terms of the portfolios that we run. But yeah, pretty much website, LinkedIn. I don't do too much else. You know, I don't even have Instagram. Unfortunately, I'm starting to feel really old because yeah, I've got Facebook and LinkedIn. That's about it. So pretty old school.
Yeah, well, I mean, LinkedIn's where I live now. It seems to be, well, yeah, where all the content I want to push out is as well. So yeah, well, thank you very much for coming on short notice because I only pinged you yesterday.
No, absolutely. So, yeah, no, I tried to prepare a bit so I could have got a better analogy together around a spot Bitcoin ETF rather than a bag of M&Ms.
But I did draw that on you. Like, yeah. You didn't know that there was an analogy coming, so...
I didn't know, so, yeah.
Right, awesome. Well, thank you very much for coming on.
Perfect, great.